40. A Rendezvous. There had been tears while she was waiting, but Nadia went in to meet him joyfully. When she appeared in the doorway, Gleb was already on his feet and smiling a greeting. His smile lasted while he took one step toward her and she one step toward him, but it filled her with exultant happiness. She saw that he was as close to her as ever. He had not changed toward her. The bull-necked ex-gangster in the soft grey suit approached the little table and barred the way across the little room, preventing them from coming together.
"Let me at least touch her hand,"
Nerzhin said indignantly.
"It's not allowed."
The guard lowered his heavy jaw a fraction of an inch to emit the words. Nadja's smile did not hide her dismay, but she signalled to her husband not to argue. She sank onto the chair placed ready for her. The stuffing was escaping from the leather upholstery in places. Generations of interrogators, who had sent hundreds of people to their graves and shortly followed them, had taken their turns on that chair.
"Happy birthday," said Nadia, trying to look cheerful.
"Thank you.
What a coincidence, us meeting today.
Must be my lucky day."
Talking was proving difficult. Nadia made an effort not to feel the guard's eyes upon her and his oppressive presence. Gleb was trying to sit so that the rickety stool would not cause him pain. A small table across which prisoners faced their interrogators stood between husband and wife.
"In case I forget, I've brought you a bite to eat. Some of those straws like mother makes, remember? I'm sorry, that's all it is."
"Silly girl, you shouldn't have bothered. We get everything we need."
"I don't suppose you get pastry straws. And you told me not to bring books. Do you read your Yesenin?"
Nerzhin's face clouded over. It was more than a month since somebody had informed on him, and Shikin had taken the book away, saying that Yesenin was forbidden.
"Yes, I do."
They had only half an hour. He really couldn't go into details. The room wasn't at all hot. In fact, it seemed to be unheated. But Nadia unbuttoned her collar and turned it down. She wanted her husband to see not only her new coat made that year, which for some reason he hadn't mentioned, but her new blouse too, and she thought that the blouse might lend a little colour to her face, which must look sallow in that dim light. With a single glance, Gleb took in her face, her throat, her open-necked blouse. That look was the most important moment of the visit, and Nadia stirred as though offering herself to it eagerly.
"You've got a new blouse. Let's see a bit more of it."
She looked a little hurt.
"What about the coat?"
"What about it?"
"The coat's new, too."
Gleb caught on at last.
"So it is. You've got a new coat."
He ran his eyes over the black curls, not knowing that it was Astrakhan, let alone whether it was real or artificial. No man on earth was less capable of distinguishing a 500-ruble coat from one worth 5,000. She threw the coat open, and he saw her neck as smooth and girlish as ever, her weak, slender shoulders, and, under the gathers of her blouse, her breasts, which had sagged miserably in all those years. Mentally he reproached her for living a life in which new finery and new friends were a matter of course, but when he saw her pathetically sunken bosom, this fleeting thought gave way to pity. Her life, like his, had been crushed beneath the wheels of the grey prison truck.
"You're a bit thin," he said compassionately. "You must eat more. Can't you eat better?" "Am I so ugly, then?"
her eyes asked.
"You're as wonderful as ever,"
her husband's eyes answered. Although the lieutenant colonel had not prohibited these words, it was impossible to say them with a third person present.
"I eat a lot,"
she said untruthfully.
"But I'm always in a rush, and I've got a lot to worry about."
"Tell me about it."
"No, you first."
"Never mind me," Gleb said, smiling. "I'm all right."
"Well, then."
She was embarrassed. The guard was standing half a meter from the table, a solid bulldog of a man, staring down at husband and wife as fixedly and contemptuously as stone lions at the doors of great houses look upon passers-by. They had to find a safe tone, a language of eloquent hints that this man, obviously intellectually inferior, would not understand. She changed the subject abruptly. "Is that your own suit?"
"Mine? It's like a Potemkin village. Strictly temporary. For 3 hours only. Don't let the Sphinx put you off."
"I can't help it," she said plaintively, pouting like a little girl, sure now that her husband still found her attractive.
"We're used to seeing the funny side of it."
"Yes, but we aren't," Nadia said with a sigh,
remembering her conversation with Gerasimovich's wife. Nelzhin tried to trap his wife's knees between his own, but even this contact was hindered by an awkward crossbar attached to the table at just the right height to prevent a prisoner under investigation from stretching his legs. The table wobbled. Supporting himself on his elbows and leaning closer to his wife, Gleb said with annoyance, "That's how it is. Obstacles everywhere." His look said, "Are you mine? Truly mine?" Her grey eyes shone, telling him, "I'm still the girl you loved. I'm just as I was. Please believe me."
"What about obstacles at work? Tell me about it. You say you aren't registered as a graduate student anymore?"
"No."
"Has your thesis been examined?"
"No, again."
"Why ever not?"
"I'll tell you."
She began speaking very rapidly, afraid that they might not have much time left.
"Nobody presents a thesis in 3 years. They're given extensions. One girl spent 2 years writing a thesis on problems of public catering. Then they made her change her subject." "Why tell him this? It was of no importance at all."
"My thesis is finished and typed, but I'm held up by the need to rework a few passages."
"Held up by the struggle against subservience to the bourgeois West. But this wasn't the place to go into that."
"And then there are photocopies to be made, and I don't know what to do about the binding. I've got plenty to worry about."
"But they do pay your grant?"
"No."
"So what are you living on?"
"My wages."
"Oh, you're working."
"Where?" "Right there, in the university."
"What sort of job?"
"It's just temporary. I'm an invisible helper, if you know what I mean. In general, I live from hand to mouth, really. It's the same with the dormitory. I shouldn't really..."
She glanced at the guard. She was going to say that the police should long ago have cancelled her permit to live at Straminka Street, but, quite by mistake, had extended it for 6 months. She might be found out any day. All the more reason not to talk about it in the presence of an MGB sergeant.
"I only got this visit today because it just so happened that..."
"Oh, dear. Half an hour wasn't long enough." "Wait a bit. You can tell me that later. What I wanted to ask you was, are there any obstacles because of me?"
"Very serious ones, my dear. They want to give me a special topic. I'm doing my best to avoid it."
"What do you mean, a special topic?"
She sighed and glanced at the guard.
His face, like that of a guard dog ready to bark or bite her head off at any moment, was suspended less than a meter from their faces.
Nadia made a helpless gesture.
She would have had to explain that even in the university there were now practically no research topics without a security classification. The whole of science was being labelled secret from top to bottom. What this meant for Nadia was a new, more detailed questionnaire about her husband's relatives, and the relatives of those relatives. If she put down, "Husband convicted under Article 58, they would not let her present her thesis, let alone work at the university. If she lied, "Husband reported missing on active service," she would still have to give his name. They could look it up in the card index at the Ministry of the Interior, and she would be prosecuted for giving false information. Nadia had chosen a third solution, but she was reluctant to talk about it with Gleb's watchful eyes on her, and took refuge in animated chatter.
"Listen, I'm in an amateur concert party at the university. They send me to play in concerts all the time. Not long ago I even played in the Hall of Columns on the same evening as Yakov Zak."
Gleb smiled and shook his head as though he found it hard to believe.
"Well, it was a trade union evening, and it just happened that way. But still. And do you know, it was really funny. They said my best dress was no good. I couldn't go on the platform in that." So they rang the theatre and got another one sent, a lovely one, down to my heels.
And when you'd played your piece, they took it off you?
Well, anyway, the girls say rude things about me because I'm mad about music, but I say it's better to be mad about something than somebody.
This wasn't just idle talk. She said it loud and clear. It was a clever way of letting him know the new rules she had made for herself. She leaned forward as though she expected a pat on the head. Nerzhin looked at his wife, gratefully and anxiously. But for the moment, he couldn't find the words of praise and approval she expected. But what about the special topic?
Nadia lowered her eyes and hung her head.
I was going to tell you, but you won't take it to heart, nicht wahr? You once insisted that we should get a divorce.
Her last words were very quiet. This was the third possibility, the only one that promised her some chance of making a life for herself. Her dossier must contain not the word divorced, because she would still have to give her ex-husband's name, his present address, the names of his parents and even their birth dates, occupations and address. No, it must say unmarried. And for this, she would have to get a divorce in another town and keep it quiet. Yes, he had once insisted on it. But now he was of two minds. Only now did he notice that the wedding ring she had never been without was not on her finger.
Yes, of course, he said very firmly.
Nadia rubbed the table with the palm of that same ringless hand, as though she was rolling stiff dough into a flat cake.
Well, then, would you object if I have to do it?
He raised her head. Her eyes were wide. The pinpoints of her grey pupils implored him to understand and forgive.
It would be a sham,
she added, in a single, almost inaudible breath.
Good for you. It's about time,
Gleb agreed emphatically. In his heart, he was far less positive, but he was putting off any attempt to make sense of it all until the visit was over.
I may not have to do it, she said,
still pleading with him. She pulled her coat back over her shoulders, and at that moment she looked careworn and exhausted.
I wanted to know whether you agree, just in case. It may not be necessary.
No, you're right, of course. It's a good idea, Gleb said mechanically.
His mind was already on the main point he had written down on his list, and which it was now time to spring on her.
It is important for you to be clear about things, my dear. You mustn't bank on my release when my sentence is over.
He himself was fully prepared for a second sentence and an indefinite term in jail. It had already happened to many of his comrades. This was something he couldn't put in a letter, and he had to speak out now. Nadia looked apprehensive. The sentence you're given is nominal, Gleb said in a quick, hard voice, misplacing the stresses on words so that the guard wouldn't keep up with him. It can escalate in a spiral. History provides a wealth of examples. And if, by some miracle, my sentence does come to an end, you mustn't think that we can return to our own town and our old life. You must realize, get it firmly into your head, you can't buy a ticket to the land of the past. What I most regret, for instance, is that I'm not a shoemaker. How badly needed that sort of thing is in a settlement out in the Taiga, in Krasnoyarsk, say, or on the lower reaches of the Angara. That's the sort of life we ought to prepare ourselves for. He had achieved his end. The retired gangster did not stir. He could only blink as the sentences sped past him. But Gleb had forgotten, or rather failed to understand, as they all did, that those who are used to walking on warm grey earth cannot be expected to scale icy mountains at short notice. He did not realize that his wife went on, as she always had, methodically, meticulously counting the days and weeks of his sentence. For him, his term was a bright, cold infinity. For her, there remained 264 weeks, 61 months, a little over 5 years. A much shorter time than had passed since he went to the war from which he would not return. As Gleb went on, the fear in Nadia's face turned to ashen terror. Her words tumbled over one another.
No, no, no. Don't tell me that, my dearest.
She had forgotten all about the guard and her inhibitions.
Don't take away my hope. I refuse to believe it. I mustn't believe it. It simply can't be like that. You didn't think, surely, that I would really leave you.
Her upper lip quivered. Her face was contorted. Her eyes expressed nothing but devotion, endless devotion.
I do believe you. I do, my little Nadia, Glib said in a different voice. That's what I thought.
She sank back in her chair and was silent. The sprightly, dark-haired Lieutenant Colonel appeared in the doorway, cast a sharp eye on the three heads so confidentially close, and quietly called the guard aside. The bull-necked gangster moved reluctantly, as though he were being dragged away from a delicious dessert, and went over to the Lieutenant Colonel. There were only four steps behind Nadja's back, and exchanged only a sentence or two. But Gleb had time to ask in a muffled voice,
"Do you know Sir Logdin's wife?"
Nadia had plenty of practice and was not left behind by this sudden switch.
"Yes."
"Know where she lives?"
"Yes."
"They won't allow him a visit."
"Tell her he—"
The gangster was back.
"Loves, worships, adores,"
Gleb said in his presence, speaking very distinctly. Precisely because the gangster was there, Sir Logdin's words somehow did not sound too extravagant.
"Loves, worships, adores,"
Nadia repeated with a sad sigh. She looked closely at her husband. She had scrutinized him in the past as closely as only a woman can, though because of her youth she might have missed something. She had thought that she knew him, but she saw now a new man, a man she did not know. She nodded her head sadly.
"It suits you."
"What does?"
"You know, this place. All this. Being here," she said,
slightly varying her tone of voice to disguise her meaning.
"Being in prison suits him,"
from the guard. But seeing him in a new light brought him no closer. It made him more of a stranger. She, too, was saving up what she had learned until after the visit, when she could think it over and decide what it all meant. She did not know what her conclusions would be, but her heart went ahead of her mind, and she looked now for signs of weakness, weariness, illness, a plea for help. Something to make a woman sacrifice the remainder of her life, wait another 10 years if need be, and go to join him in the tiger. But he was smiling. Smiling just as complacently as he had at Krasnaya Presnya. He was always so independent. He never needed sympathy from anyone. He even seemed to be comfortable on that small, bare stool. He seemed to be looking around with some enjoyment, collecting material for his history even in this place. He looked well, and his eyes sparkled with amusement at his jailers. Did he really need a woman's loyalty? Nadia, however, had not yet thought all this, and Gleb did not realize what she was close to thinking. Klementyev was at the door. "Time's up."
"Already?"
said Nadia in surprise. Gleb frowned in an effort to remember the most important items left on his list of things to tell her, learned by heart before the visit. "Oh, yes. Don't be surprised if they move me to some place a long way from here and let us stop altogether."
"Might they? Where to?"
Nadia cried. Such frightening news. And he'd kept it to himself till now.
"God knows,"
he said with a shrug, but as if he meant it to be taken literally.
"Don't tell me you've started believing in God."
They hadn't managed to talk about anything. Gleb smiled. "Why not? Pascal, Newton, Einstein?
Weren't you told not to mention names?"
the guard bawled. "Time's up, now." Husband and wife rose together, and now that there was no danger of the visit ending prematurely, Gleb reached over the table, put his arms around Nadia's slender neck, kissed it, and pressed his mouth to her lips. He had forgotten how soft they were. He had no hope of being in Moscow in a year's time to kiss them again. His voice shook with tenderness.
"Do whatever is best for yourself. I shall always—"
He didn't finish. They looked into each other's eyes.
"What do you call this, then? I'm terminating the visit,"
roared the guard, tugging at Nyazhin's shoulder. Nyazhin broke away.
So terminate it, damn you,
he muttered, barely audibly. Nadia backed toward the door, waving goodbye to her husband with the fingers of one raised hand, a hand without a ring. Still waving, she disappeared from the doorway.